Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our episode of Vox Vomitus. My name is Jennifer Ann Gordon. I am the author of the gothic horror novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, and the soon-to-be-released From Daylight to Madness. Joined with me today is my co-host, Trisha Ridinger McGee, the author of the romantic suspense novel Beyond the Surface, and one of my biggest internet girl crushes, Mother Horror herself, Sadie Hartman.
Yay! I'm Mother Horror.
So, everybody who's listening, who's seen the show for the past few weeks, today is a special episode. And if you're listening to this, please know that special is in air quotes, because this is a book club episode where we are discussing the cult horror novel, Let's Go Play at the Addams. It's okay to cringe. Yes, Sadie's got her actual paper. So, Sadie, I would love you to just talk about who you are, what got you into horror, and a little bit about yourself before we get into all of the gross things about this book.
Sure. So my name is Sadie Hartman, a.k.a. Mother Horror on social media. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram under Mother Horror. I also have a Facebook page that I don't check as often because Facebook is poop. And I, have a business that I co-own with my friend Ashley. And she is known as Bookish Mommy on Instagram and Twitter. Our business is a horror book subscription service that comes to people's doors monthly. So we are literally supplying horror to the community every month. And it has been a lifesaver during quarantine and coronavirus. I think people love having horror delivered to their door that is fictional and not real, because we've all had enough of real horror. Let's see what else. I review horror for Scream Magazine, which is a bi-monthly published magazine in the UK. And I also review horror for Cemetery Dance Online. And you can find my reviews there. You can find my articles about horror on Lit Reactor and also Tor Nightfire. That's me.
So that is you. Sadie, can I ask how old were you when you got really interested in horror?
I always gravitated towards spooky, dark, scary things when I was a kid. I loved Roald Dahl because Roald Dahl would talk about dog poop and witches and bratty children and old ladies who were scary. I also loved, there's an author named John Bellairs, who is a British author, I believe, and he wrote dark mysteries with some little boy characters who they would go and stay with like an eccentric uncle and then discover like spooky stuff and mysteries. And so at a really young age, I was reading chapter books that were spooky or scary. And then I read my first Stephen King. I stole it from my mom's bookshelf when I was 13. So I read Salem's Lot when I was 13. That was my first Stephen King.
My first was Pet Sematary because I thought it was about a cat.
Yeah.
No. And I stole it from my uncle.
That's a heavy first Stephen
Not
King.
Not about a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very sad. It's much sadder as an adult when you read Pet Sematary. Like when you're a kid and you read it or Salem's Lot or whatever, it's a totally different experience than when you read it as like a parent, wouldn't you say?
I agree.
But I do own
animals. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, just having an older person perspective on like what's going on with children. It's devastating.
Yeah.
Sadie, did you just call us older persons?
Sorry. I am like 44, so I am considering myself old.
We're all in the same age bracket.
Yes,
we are.
Good.
So to get to the meat of this episode, for the viewers and watchers who have never heard of it, Let's Go Play at the Addams is a cult horror novel that for many years was banned and you couldn't find it. It went out of print. And that's when I personally became a little bit obsessed with it because I couldn't find it.
Yeah, so I first heard about Let's Go Play at the Addams because I was subscribed to Valancourt Books, their subscription package where they would send us classic horror every month, I believe, for 5 months for a low price. So I think you paid like $87 and you got like five books in this little cute, like, you know, mass market size. So really intriguing, you know, package deal that they had going on, and I had to have it. So this book actually came out in their second round.
Wow.
Yeah. So the first round was five really great titles. And then this was like the third or fourth book in the second round. And I did both. But it's part of that Paperbacks from Hell series, which is why Grady Hendrix yes. does the foreword. So that's how I've been putting it off, to be honest. So when you said, let's read it, I was like, okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, Jen. Thanks.
I know. I made one of our co-hosts not be on the episode because it was so gross. So Trisha, you read this book years ago. It's not.
I used to I would get books at old bookstores and yard sales, and I came across it then, and I remember reading it because I was young and you just don't know, you know, what you're getting into. I mean, I was a teenager and everything, but it definitely stuck with me. So I didn't really venture or try to get the book now because it stuck with me, and I wasn't going through that again. It was enough. So the details are a little foggy for me, but I did read it the whole way through, and I've done some research, you know, this past week on it. I mean, the cult fascination with it, that fascinates me, that people are so, like, obsessed with this book now. I'm not sure if it's just one of those out-to-shock, you know, writings that people seem to gravitate toward. But yeah, it surprised me to hear that there was a cult following. And if you go online and look, there definitely is. This book has been mentioned in other books, and like The Abyss mentions this book. It doesn't mention it by name, but the author did confirm that was the book he was talking about. And it's fascinating how he used the book.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, so I think we need to get into the nitty gritty of this. We're just going to say, viewers, listeners, we are going to give you spoilers, and this is for your own safety. I got 3/4 of the way through the book. Sadie, you got what, about half?
Yeah, I got halfway through the book. I think I tapped out around 127 pages. And this book isn't long. It's about 250, 230.
Right.
Yeah. Again, viewers, listeners, Sadie and I did kind of keep some reading journals, and we were able to buddy message each other during our reading process. So today we'll probably be reading a couple of our entries. Usually they're just one line, probably in my case, one line of what the bleep word is happening.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, the premise of Let's Go Play at the Addams is a babysitter who is caring for children while their family is away in Europe gets chloroformed and tied to a bed, and then the children of the neighborhood, quote unquote, do things to her. So there's that. So as you can imagine, as women, we're very comfortable with that scenario.
I mean, just on the face of it, just the description of the book and like the synopsis, hearing you say what it's about, I've never even heard of a real story besides, you know, the one that The Girl Next Door was based on and the one that Trisha mentioned before we went live. So there is like one situation, but I mean, this isn't like something really common that happened. So I'm kind of curious as to what made the author, like, if it wasn't based on that, what made the author be like, hey, this would be good grounds for a story?
So when I was reading it, I guess when I read the synopsis, I thought it was one family of children torturing her. But then when I started reading the book and I realized it was like a neighborhood of children.
Yeah.
It seemed, I would hope, unrealistic that there would be an entire neighborhood of sociopaths in suburban Maryland in, I think, the 1960s is when this is based.
Yeah. And he wrote this in 74. So, you know, I was not even born yet.
74. So if this was written in 74, then the racism and misogyny is even worse than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, he was known to be not a nice man.
Oh, really?
Yes. His family members that were interviewed, I mean, this is just hearsay. He died 2 years after that book.
That's right. I did hear that.
Yes. I guess he was, he did not like kids at all, hated kids, and of course was not fond of women. Who knew?
Who could tell?
Shocker.
Yes. But I guess he was pretty cruel to his wives. So there's
kids
that.
Kids wives.
Yes.
Wives. Wives plural.
Wives. Yeah. Wives. Yes. He, yeah, he was on his second wife when he died. So,
Yeah. Well, I'm shocked it wasn't more and or drastically less than two wives. He did not seem to like women at all. And I feel like most of my notes, I tried to stay away from the torture-y stuff and just go straight to how terrible he was to women and immigrants. So, Sadie, why don't you tell us some of your first impressions of this book?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can read your notes.
I mean, starting right off at the beginning, my notes do say, you know, by page 15, so there's not a huge setup here. There's very little character development. And by page 15, she is tied up to the bed. So she kind of does this weird psychoanalysis of the children a little bit, like before page 15, before she's tied up, she kind of like has this introspective monologue running through her head where she kind of introduces the kids for the readers and is just like, oh, here's John. He's kind of like this. And here's, you know, this Cindy and she's like this. And so there's like, I think three kids from the same household. And then there's like a neighborhood cluster of like five kids that they play with. That kind of come in and are introduced later. So my first note is, oh, wow, you know, here we go, page 15, she's already tied up. And then by page 26, I said, the fact was that until today, none of them had ever seen an adult human made helpless. While it affected each differently, it carried a common meaning for them all. So I think right in page 26, he's setting up for us kind of that Lord of the Flies vibe where it's like, what would happen if kids were left to their own devices and took the authority figure and tied her up and, you know, could have some freedom? And I think that's what the initial story is about. And it's actually kind of boring, to be honest. I was bored.
I was also very bored because the writing wasn't great. And my initial notes are, my first note is, oh, page 15, she's already tied to the bed.
So similar.
And then she refers to herself. So this is poor Barbara, the tied up babysitter. She refers to herself as not being the thinking type.
Hmm.
So that was bothersome to me.
Yeah.
She's a woman.
She also refers. woman. She referred to herself again as she was intelligent enough, but too sensitive.
Hmm. Yeah, she does have a really low opinion of herself.
She does. And she also talks a lot about how, so the character of Barbara is in college to become a teacher, supposedly. But at one point, about halfway through the book, she talks about how she was really only in college to meet a husband, and teaching was just something to pass the time, which is, you know, sad and gross.
Yeah.
I also have a note about one of the kids saying, I love pretty feet.
Oh, yeah.
And then my note after that was, how do you make this book worse? I know, add a foot fetish from a child.
Yeah, that was really unseemly.
And at that point, I thought, can I keep reading? And I think I was only on page like 24.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction too, where it was just like, do I really want to go here? And it was basically, let me see, I'm going to fast forward here. By 73, she refers to herself as Sexy Barbara.
Sexy Barbara.
As soon as Sexy Barbara also... Okay, let me back up a little bit. First of all, after she's tied up, okay, she starts having an imaginary conversation with an old childhood friend or somebody that she knew in college. I have no idea what the relationship is, but she starts having an imaginary conversation with Terry. And Terry is sort of like this person that it's almost like the author needed a literary device for her to be able to like give us some info dumps. There's some info dumps through this imaginary character named Terry. And I was annoyed with it from the beginning. And then she starts talking to herself. So there's normal Barbara who's tied up and tortured and needs to go to the bathroom and needs a drink of water. And she's just terribly distraught. But then she thinks one of the tactics that she can use is to sexually charm John or Paul, the older boys, and she refers to herself as Sexy Barbara. And she doesn't think she's very good at it because she's a virgin.
Yeah, she's not good at it. That part made me cringe and scream inside so much because they didn't say it, but there was this subtext of Sexy Barbara that almost didn't mind being tied up and tortured. And then I'm jumping to almost the halfway mark when Sexy Barbara / Barbara is sexually violated by one of the boys. And she says, and I quote, if it was my fate to be raped, I am so glad that it was at the hands of somebody I knew who was almost caring and kind.
How sick.
That is so... I texted you, Sadie, at that point and said, I don't know if I can keep going. And I didn't go on for much longer. But I was so upset with that because it didn't make sense to me as a woman or human.
Yeah, no. And further along in the story, and I only am hearing this because I actually read some reviews because I did want to see what ended up happening without actually really reading it. And someone said that there is a portion where after she is raped by John, she actually, because she was a virgin and she kind of like guesses that she's going to die, she starts thinking that maybe she would enjoy the next
Yes.
Like, so she actually tries to enjoy her second rape.
They call it her survival mode. I'm sorry, that's not survivor mode at all.
No.
It
falls into that weird misogynistic sort of author trope where it's like not the girls deserving to be raped, they're not going that far, but it's part of their rape fantasy where the girls are actually into it.
Yes, right. That's not survivor mode. That's just a very, very sick Wait, of her.
So it's, you know, it's the fantasy that, oh, it can start out bad, but then at the end of the day, if she was a virgin, she's going to somehow imprint on her abuser.
One of the abusers was not, at least he was nice enough. One of the abusers that tied her up, putting her captive, at least it was a nice one. You know. Yeah.
And she does talk a lot about his broad shoulders. Broad shoulders, and he's handsome for a 16-year-old. And if it was like a different time or place, maybe things would be different. I'm like screaming in my head reading that.
Well, and I don't, as a reviewer, I never ever make a habit of attacking the author for a book that I'm not enjoying. You know, like there's characters who are misogynistic, there's characters who are racist, there's characters who say, you know, really inappropriate things, and we wouldn't assign those personalities and character traits to the author because that isn't fair, you know, like that I just don't make a habit of doing that. However, in this particular case with this particular story, it felt like he didn't understand the person of a woman, you know, like it's almost like he, like you just wouldn't write a woman being raped in this way or a woman being tortured in this way. Like he wasn't empathetic towards her situation at all. I mean, people will disagree. People will disagree and say that, you know, she has all this inner monologue and turmoil, and it was very heartbreaking, but not in the same way that The Girl Next Door was. Jack Ketchum's The Girl Next Door, I had to tap out of that one because it was too emotionally tied to that particular character. Like, it was too close. It was too resonant. Like, I understood it at too... it was too... like, I felt complicit and almost guilty in reading it because it was so real. This didn't feel like that.
So, this does not feel real. It feels disgusting, and I felt wrong reading it. But it never felt real because there's another moment, again, maybe almost at the halfway mark, where she's already been raped and tortured, and she's looking at the older girl, and Barbara, the tied up baby, thinking, would it kill her to do her hair better? She would be more likable if she was prettier. And just as women, if I had just been raped and I'm tied up to a bed and I'm being tortured by a group of children, I really wouldn't be criticizing another woman's looks. Hair at that moment.
Yeah, that's that character you're talking about named Diane. Is that correct? The older girl, Diane. Yeah. And she is a really unbelievable character because, you know, again, I'll bring in the Lord of the Flies. The magic of Lord of the Flies is that all the boys kind of go through like a transformation and they have this like moral code. And some of the boys decide, like, let's test and see what's going to happen when there's no authority to stop us. And there's just this natural progression. Whereas Diane, she is just indifferent towards the whole situation. It's like, here's a woman who is being raped and tortured and harmed in all kinds of ways. And she's completely indifferent, has like no emotional response to it all other than just cruelty for cruelty's sake. And it's like, wouldn't a parent kind of realize that their child is a sociopath? I mean, she's like 16 or 17, that character.
Yeah, she's the closest in age to tied up Barbara. And she's the older sister of the boy with the foot fetish. So I feel like the parents in that house have either checked out completely because they don't know that two of their children are actual monsters. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, Diane's character made no sense to me either.
No.
But apparently her hair was very bad because they talk about that a lot. They talk about her hair being bad more than they talk about the emotional impact of tied up Barbara being
raped. Really weird. I mean, they talk about, yes. I'm not really sure either if it's Barbara that's being described or Diane, but they talk about, like, the narrator talks about how flat-chested she is as well.
Oh, I think that's Diane.
Yeah, so
Diane. Yeah.
Of course it's Diane. No wonder she's so mean. She has no boobs.
No wonder she's torturing beautiful Barbara. Nice.
Right. Well, how interesting is this then? Because if that's the case, if Diane, who is the plain Jane, okay, and also here's Barbara, who's tied up, like, there's kind of almost this feeling that Barbara is innocent and pure in the sense that she is good. She was like their helper, their babysitter, their playmate. Like, she took them swimming. She was kind to them. She was good. And she's the victim. She's the one that's being tied up and victimized and stuff. And here you have Diane, who doesn't have a relationship with these kids, who has played cruel games with them before. Like, this is all just sort of like a reenactment, an extension of a weird game that they've played before, according to, like, 9-year-old character Cindy says that this is something they've done before. So I'm a little bit confused as to why they pick Barbara, if it wasn't on the author's intention that it would be more of a story if we have a good person being victimized rather than, you know, somebody who, like Diane, who would probably be targeted because the kids didn't like her. You know, nobody's nice to Diane. No, Diane doesn't even talk to them.
Nobody likes Diane. Diane is she's bossy. She's the eldest. She's homely. Every character talks about it, how homely she is and how mean she is. None of this makes sense.
Yeah.
Another thing that doesn't make sense is that two of the characters who are brother and sister are called Bobby and Cindy, and I just, like, the Brady Bunch thing.
Oh, I never saw that together. Yes.
Like, I could barely read it. I'm like, Bobby and Cindy would never chloroform. They would never chloroform Alice.
I have never thought of that.
It's all I could think about.
That's hilarious.
It's all I could think about until, so I think, Sadie, you did not get to the part where, so this book is incredibly misogynistic, and then at the halfway mark, it adds in racism to make it a trifecta of all the things that make me put down a book, which is why I ended up putting this down. They have a fruit picker who they see, like, off in the distance, who is in Maryland to pick fruit of some kind. And all the children say, let's kill Barbara, blame the murder on the fruit picker, because the pickers have open hostility, oily skin, bad temper, and heavy, ugly faces.
That's my
last note before I was like, and you have checked off every box that I can't handle.
Yeah, so this is well after I've tapped out, so I didn't get to this part, but that is infuriating.
You know, it was all infuriating, but every review I had read had talked about the misogyny, but they didn't, most of them didn't talk about the racism. So I guess I was a little surprised when you have a group of, you know, white upper class children, who decide to blame somebody that they don't even understand where they're from. They never say the word Mexico, but it's clearly Mexico because they use a word that I didn't know, and I looked it up, and it meant a type of shirt that Mexican teenage boys wore.
Yeah, you're right. I've read several reviews just because I wanted to kind of see what is the general consensus among reviewers for this book. And it's really all over the map. There are a lot of, like, 4 and 5 stars with people saying that it's really entertaining. And like I mentioned earlier, I was like, I'm a little bit concerned when people say, like, oh, you know, I was really excited to read this book because of the hype. And to be honest, you know, it's not as disturbing as people say. That might be their opinion, but it is disturbing. Like, I mean, no question about it. This is a disturbing tale. And I couldn't hang with it because, and for totally different reasons than I couldn't hang with The Girl Next Door, but kind of tapped out at the same moment. In The Girl Next Door, I got to a place where a new character is brought in, and he kind of reminds me of Paul in Let's Go Play at the Addams, where he escalates the situation very quickly. So it's like, this girl has been tied up for however long, the babysitter, and they're kind of like keeping her as a pet. They take her out to go to the bathroom. They feed her. They look at her. You know, she's kind of museum quality in that they're just staring at her and just kind of enjoying the freedom. But then this character, Paul, kind of escalates it. The minute he's alone with her, he starts kind of cutting on her with a knife. And that was when I was kind of like, this is that torture porn that I am uncomfortable with. So really shortly after, she gets raped by another character named John. And that's where I tapped out. And in The Girl Next Door, it's almost the same situation for me where it's like I was very engaged all the way up until the part where a character is brought in, a neighborhood child who escalates the situation very quickly. And that's where it's just like, this is not entertainment for me. I don't get off with this. Like,
right.
I enjoy character-driven horror as much as the next person, but this is something extra that makes me feel uncomfortable. And I'm not judging other people who it doesn't, you know, like plenty of people who finish it for the sake of finishing it. But for me, that's just a boundary.
I think it's, and I very rarely say anything bad about a writer as a writer. I hate it when people say bad things about me, but it can be lazy writing when you are doing something that has no character development, that's just for shock value. Exactly. Like in Let's Go Play at the Addams, Paul, John, all of them, there is no character development. There's no reason why the kids hate adults so much other than one paragraph, I think, in chapter 2 or 3, where they all talk about how bored they are. And I feel like we've all been bored, but we haven't all up a babysitter and with like chloroform tied her up, knew how to tie sailor's knots, all of this elaborate stuff. I don't like writing for shock value alone. No. I love horror, obviously, and I love shock, but it needs to be, I think it has to come from something that's incredibly emotional, either with the characters in the book or the reader, and this did not have either of those.
Yeah, agree. And also in The Girl Next Door, that was kind of the difference there too, was there was a main character, a boy, who felt very disgusted and very like conflicted about everything that was happening to the girl, which made it even that much harder to stomach because he was so emotionally conflicted and disturbed. And so it made it reading it like really difficult. Whereas in this one, like you said, it was all just for show. There wasn't any character development. There wasn't any character other than like Bobby, maybe a little bit.
A little bit.
But I mean, not enough to where I was like believing it. And if I can't believe it, and if I can't emotionally invest in it, there's no purpose in it for me. And that's what this book was. It's sort of like eating a really shitty Twinkie when you're on your diet and you're like, is this worth cheating on my diet? This is a crappy excuse for a dessert. But if there's, you know, tiramisu, I will gladly spend the points on tiramisu because it's worth it. This was not
worth it. This was definitely not tiramisu. This was not even an actual Twinkie. It was like a
gas station generic Twinkie.
Yeah, agreed.
That's called something else like Yellow Log. And you're like, I guess it'll be as good. No.
No, not even comparable, unfortunately.
So, Trisha, you did research on this, and I know we're kind of running out of time, but I do want to get to this. You did research. You know the ending of this. So, yes. Viewers, listeners, you still want to read this book. I wouldn't recommend it, but if you don't want to know the end, I feel like you know the end. There's only one way this can go. Trisha is about to tell us what the end is. Sadie and I don't know, but we do know.
Yeah, we did. I looked it up too, but let's let Trisha tell us.
There's only one way.
I remember when I read it the first time, again, years ago, it stuck with me because the ending was gruesome, but she dies at the end. I mean, they murder her. There's no other way. They, you know, it's just very gruesome. So I don't remember what happens to the kids.
Good.
So I don't remember that.
Nothing.
Well, do they dispose of the body?
I don't know. I know. She just died.
And she'd have looked it up. I would.
It got kind of gruesome because I remember throughout the book thinking the writing was boring. The writing was very, and it seemed to just kind of explode in this almost trying too hard sort of fiasco. It just got a bit much to read. And I mean, I can read a lot, you know, I can read stuff that can, you know, but this was a bit much. So I don't know if I just kind of tapped out after that, but I don't remember what happened. Again, this was when I was a teenager, so that's decades ago.
Yeah, that's a long time to try to remember like exact details about the story.
Yes.
And I'm sorry I even wanted you to re-remember it. Mainly concerned about the poor fruit picker that they kept saying they were going to blame this on. This fictional fruit picker who has no name was never named.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of that true crime story of that woman who had her children buckled up in the backseat of the car. And then she drove it into a lake. Yeah. And then she told people later that a black man had hijacked her car. Yeah. It reminds me of that, where it's you know, here's all these like very upper class children, because I got the sense that, you know, the mom and dad are on a vacation. That's like an extended holiday that they took without their children.
Right.
And then they had the means and the money to pay for, you know, she's 20, this college age student to watch their children. And, you know, so it's very upper class, very like socially acceptable for this to be going on and stuff. And so for then the children to blame it on, you know, this working class person, you can just tell, like, I don't know. The author inserted himself too often into the narrative because it's sort of this third person omniscient narrative. So like his opinions were like kind of in there quite a bit.
Yes, I feel like. Absolutely. I agree with that.
And you, like, you just walk away with it knowing very little about the characters, but knowing that whoever wrote this hated women, hated children, hated minorities.
Yeah.
And I really feel like he hated the written word because this was not very good.
Yeah. Yeah, really terrible implemented literary devices, long monologues, super boring for the subject material. I mean, the first like 50 pages were pretty boring.
Yes.
I thought after the first 50 pages, I'd be able to get through it, even if I was bored senseless.
Yeah.
Like, this is so stupid. And it immediately goes from "I'm so bored" to "Let's enter Paul with the knife."
Yep.
And then the rape, and then really graphic descriptions of just how they drag her body through the house.
Yes.
Naked.
Yes.
And I feel like The dragging was so descriptive that it made me think he does know how to write description. He's just choosing not to, and this is a terrible thing to describe.
Well, and it's repeated too. That process of getting her up out of bed to use the bathroom is repeated like two or three times where you're just like, this again? Like, nothing has changed.
So you tapped out before they move her to this old shed in the backyard.
Oh, thank God.
And it's the whole same thing. Like, they're bringing her to the bathroom, except through woods and sticks.
Oh, my God.
And that's when I tapped out. I'm like, and done. No more sticks.
Goodbye.
All right. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I really tried. So, this is a... obviously, a really wonderful endorsement of the book, Let's Go Play at the Addams.
Well, I mean, just for the sake of Valancourt Books, let's just do a little plug here for Valancourt Books. This book right here, people were buying it for like $200 and $300,
yes,
the vintage copies, because of its cult classic status. So thank you, Valancourt, for rescuing those rights and putting it out there in a very easy to read, very nice formatted, you know, great cover design on that.
Love the cover.
You know, it's this door that opens up and peeks in on the babysitter just kind of sitting there, you know? So, I mean, thank you, Valancourt, for rescuing old books that need to be, you know, more accessible. The paperbacks from hell.
I agree. I agree so much because I think one of the messages I sent you, Sadie, was I spent so many hours of my life at horror shows, comic shows, book shows, looking for a copy of this book before it became readily available, just because I wanted to own it. So thank Valancourt because they have made it available. So it saves people, horror fans, and just book fans in general and paper fans in general from wasting a lot of time.
Yeah.
On their hands and knees looking.
And price gouging on eBay.
Right.
You know, I we said this before the show went live. I looked for this book for years and it averaged between $100 and $600 on eBay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And obviously not worth it.
I would be really disappointed if I spent my money on that.
I didn't know. I did not know it was like a cult classic until, you know, Jennifer, you said about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I read that years ago. And I'm thinking, what am I missing?
You're like, I don't remember it being that great.
I remember being kind of traumatized. But I'm thinking maybe, you know, I was young. Maybe I was missing something. But no.
Nothing to see here, kids.
No, there's nothing.
No.
I will say I'm thankful we did this social experiment because we were allowed to talk to you, Sadie, and that's great.
Yes.
And
thank you so much.
Awesome to have you back, either talking about a book we like, or even another book we don't like. But talking about a book we like would be really good.
Yeah.
So we have to say the word rape. I don't want to say the word rape as much in our next episode.
Well, yeah, gross. Please. Yeah, gross. I would love to come back on the show. Gross. Thank you so much for having me talk about this book and the buddy read.
I love you.
It was really fun.
Thank you so much.
I love the idea of a buddy read. So thank you again for reading a book that you knew you weren't going to like. And thank you, Trisha, for hosting and being our chaperone. And thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. Again, my name is Jennifer Ann Gordon. My co-host is Trisha Reitinger-McGee. Our guest was Sadie Hartman. And this is Vox Vomitus. We are a copywritten podcast from the Global Authors on the Air Network. You can find more about us all on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and those of us who are authors on Amazon. All the links will be below. And next week, we have USA Today bestselling author and Kickstarter genius, Russell Nohelty. So I am incredibly honored to have him. And we will see all of you next week. Bye.